Okay, so there's a joint work with these three co-authors, of which, among whom only Lars Birkedal is present. So, okay, so today I'm going to tell you about higher order dependent type theory with guarded recursion. It's based on a model, which is a well-known pre-sheaf model called the topos of trees. One of our main technical contributions was to show that this models guarded recursion in combination with dependent types. And I'll show an example of how to use this type theory as a meta-language for constructing models. I'll construct a model for a language with higher order store. So this is not the first model of this language. This has been modeled previously using metric spaces and also using step indexing. But I'll talk about why we think this is a good approach, a good alternative approach. Well, I should say that one of the things that we see from this example is that we see guarded recursion as the principle that makes the step indexing models work. Also, for the relations to the metric spaces, we see this topos here. Well, the metric space is embedded into this topos, and we see this as extending the metric space system with interesting type constructors. So here's the model. It's a well-known pre-sheaf model, as I said. It's called the topos of trees. The objects are natural number indexed families of sets together with restriction maps like this. Morphisms are natural number indexed families of maps between sets that makes the diagrams commute. So the intuition that you should have about these is that, the objects here are types, and x of n is the type as it looks if you have n computation steps to reason about it. So here's one example, which is related to a talk later on this week by Krishnaswamy and Benson. It's a type of streams of natural numbers, and in the stream, the head is immediately available, but it takes one computation step to get the tail. So if you only have one computation step, then you can only look at the head of the stream. If you have two computation steps, then you can look at the head and the head of the tail, and so on. So I also introduced some standard notation here from pre-sheaf topuses. So here's an interesting construction on this topos. It's an endofunctor called later. What it does is to switch the whole sequence of sets one step to the right, and then add a singleton at the end. So we call this later because this is what the type looks one step into the future. At x of n plus 1, we see x of n. That's the type as it looks one step into the future. This construction preserves limits, but not co-limits. And there's a natural transformation from the identity into later, which is given like this. Now, I'll talk about guarded recursion in this topos. And here's the first example of guarded recursion. It's guarded recursion on the level of terms. We say that a morphism is contractive if it factors through next, as we see here. So F is contractive as it is up there. Contractive morphisms have unique fixed points, and there's a fixed point combinator of the type depicted here. Now, I'll also say something about the internal logic of the topos. In particular, I'll talk about guarded recursion on the level of predicates, but I'll start out by recalling you that topos's model higher order logic, as written up here. These predicates are interpreted as subsets, families of subsets, closed under the restriction maps. So that's what we see here. There's a subobject classifier, and the subobject classifier we can think of as a type of propositions. The existence of the subobject classifier is what makes this higher order. So one way to describe explicitly the interpretation of these predicates up here is to use a forcing relation. We say that a predicate phi, for given a predicate phi and a natural number n and an alpha in x of n, we say that n forces alpha, phi of alpha if alpha is in the n. In the n subset corresponding to the interpretation of this predicate phi. And if we write out this, then we get the usual Kripke-Joel semantics. So this means, for instance, disjunction is interpreted pointwise. but the implication, we have to use Kripke-Chiral semantics, so the implication has to hold not only at level n, but also at all futures, so for all smaller k, this implication has to hold. There's an operator on predicates given by this later, and another operator that we also call later on the subobject classifier. It basically maps a truth value to the truth value plus one. So successor map on truth values. In terms of forcing, later of phi always holds at level one. Later of phi holds at level n plus one if and only if phi holds at level n. So later of phi holds now if phi holds one step into the future. So I've talked about two things that I've called later, later on types and later on predicates, and these are connected using this pullback diagram. If you have a subobject of X, then you can apply later, the later operator on predicates to that, and that's the same as applying later on the later functor and then pulling back along next. Right, so this later operator that I talked about before on predicates, that's a contractive map. So it's one of these that have unique fixed points, as I said before. One can prove that if you compose two maps and one of them is contractive, then the composition is also contractive. So we can use this to prove the following. Suppose we have a predicate with a free variable of the same type here, as phi up here. And suppose every occurrence of R occurs under a later operator. Then, using the two lemmas above, you can prove that this phi, the interpretation of phi, is a contractive map on the object of predicates. So it has a unique fixed point, and that's why we can talk about the fixed points on the predicate level. So I'll state some facts about the internal logic of this topos. The first one's called monotonicity. It says, if a property holds now, it also holds one step into the future. There's a loop rule, which has been recognized previously in work by Melier and Appel and others as the induction rule that you need to reason about guarded recursion. And then we can also do some synthetic metric space theory inside this topos. We can talk about an internal notion of contractiveness here. A map is contractive if it maps elements that are later equal to elements that are equal now. And so this is a weaker notion of contractiveness than the one I talked about just before. And one can prove an internal version of the Barnard fixed point theorem inside this topos. It says that if you have a contractive map on a non-empty type, then it has a unique fixed point. So to prove this, one lemma that we proved along the way to do this was to show that if you have a contractive map, then there exists an n such that f to the n, the n-fold composition of f by itself is constant. So this property here does not hold in the external sense, but it does hold when you interpret it in the internal logic of the topos. So I've talked about recursion on the level of terms and predicates. We also have recursion on the level of types. So I'll just state the results here. Recall that a functor is called strong if there exists a family of morphisms like that, with these types up here, which internalize the action of f on morphisms. So satisfying some equations that I haven't put up here. We say that F is locally contractive if it's strong, and moreover, all these maps are contractive. And this generalizes easily to mixed variant functors of many variables. So if you have such a locally strong, locally contractive bifunctor on the topos S, which I presented before, like this up here, then it has a unique fixed point, a fixed point that's unique up to isomorphism. And this fixed point satisfies a universal property called initial dialgebra. This is a usual, this is a universal property for recursive types. So I'll also recall that that Topaz has modeled dependent types, so dependent products and dependent sums, as we've seen here, and also subset types. And so we'd like to show, and we've done this in this work, that these recursive types interact well with these dependent types. So to do this, I'll first recall that when interpreting dependent types in category theory in general and topazes, we interpret these in slice categories. And this means that the results that I had before for recursive types, if we want to combine these with dependent types, then we need to generalize to slices. The first step is to generalize the later operator to slices, and that can be done completely categorically. So as I've done here before, as I've done here on the slide, so an object in the slice category is a map PY from Y to I. And we can apply the later, the global later, to that, and then pull back along next. And that gives a later operator on slices, and this one behaves well with respect to reindexing. I'm not going to give you the technical details of what this means, it's in the paper. But it means, in practice, it means that we can use later as a type constructor in a dependent internal type theory of this topos here in a safe way. And the results that I presented earlier on recursive domain equations, these generalize to slices. So those were the semantic results. They imply some syntactic results. We have here a large collection of types that can be interpreted in this topos here. And we call these functorial types because all these types induce bifunctors on the functor, on the topos. So these include simple types, dependent types, dependent products, dependent sums, subset types. For the subset types, there's a condition here which is the usual condition for interpreting subset types as functors. They say that the subsets are closed under the functorial action of A. And they include the later operator, and then there's a recursive type here, which means that we can do nested recursive types. Okay, so the point here is that for the recursive types here, there's a simple syntactic check which shows that the recursive type is well defined. And this syntactic check is to check that every occurrence of this X here, this X up here, is under a later operator. If it's under a later operator, then this type defines a locally contractive functor, and so we can apply the semantic theorem that I had before. Right. So here's a small an example of an application of the type theory as a meta language for modeling. So what we've done is to interpret a corpus value language with higher order store entirely inside the internal language of S. So this language has been modeled before using step indexing and also using metric spaces. These are two different approaches. So it's not the first time that this language has been modeled, but here are some advantages of our approach, which is, first of all, everything is done in one universe. This is as opposed to the metric space model, where the metric space system was used to solve a recursive domain equation. I'll come back to the recursive domain equation. But then for doing the rest of the interpretation, one had to step outside the universe of metric spaces. Here we have a richer universe of types where we can do all the type constructions inside. The interpretation that I present here is simple and set-like. We believe it's as simple as it can get. There are no explicit steps as opposed to the step indexing model, but there are later operators occurring certain places instead. This last point here, I'll get back to you when I presented the model. So here's the language. It has product types, recursive types, polymorphic types, function types, and general reference types, so higher order store. There's a standard small-step operational semantics, copper value semantics, that I'm not going to repeat here. One can form sets of types, terms, and values, as one usually does, but what we've done here is to read these as definitions inside the internal language of S. And likewise, one can do this for the type of stores, the type of configurations. The only thing that's non-standard when reading the operational semantics inside the internal language of S is the encoding of the transitive closure of the operational semantics, and I'll show you this later on. So here are the basic ideas of the interpretation. The first idea is to interpret types as predicates on values. So it's well known that when you interpret languages with dynamic allocation, then these predicates have to depend on the world. So the world is a description of what's been allocated at a given time. So here, the set of worlds is a set of finite maps from locations, these are just natural numbers, to types T. And a type is a map that takes a world and gives a predicate on values. So this gives a recursive type equation, and this recursive type equation cannot be solved in set theory. But what we can do is to solve this equation. So what I've done here is I've taken the interpretation for T, or the equation for T over here, expanded with W, and then put a later operator outside here. So now what's on the right-hand side here is actually one of the types that I called functorial types previously. So this is a well-defined type in our type theory. If we do this, then we can define W, the set of worlds, like finite maps into this G hat type that we constructed a moment ago. And then we can define T as monotone maps from worlds into predicates on values. From here we have, so now that we have a universe of types, we can interpret every type as an element in T. A closed type is an element in T, but an open type with type variables is a map from type environments into T. We can do this by induction on Tor, and the definitions are relatively simple. They're simple and set-like, except for two cases of recursive types and reference types. So what I mean by simple and set-like, for instance here, for the product types, we interpret these as pairs of values, one being in the interpretation of one type and the other being in the interpretation of the other type. For the recursive types here, these are defined as fixed points of maps. For this fixed point to exist, we have to insert a later operator somewhere, and that's squeezed in here. So the existence of this later operator makes this the map that we have in here contractive and makes a fixed point well-defined. So that's the interpretation of types. To interpret terms, we prove a relational, what's it called? We prove a theorem like this. It says that every term, if it's well typed, then T is a computation that if it returns something, then if it terminates, then it terminates to a value that's inside the interpretation of Tor. Right. So to define this predicate comp here precisely, we have to encode the transitive closure of the operational semantics inside the internal language of S. And that's the last thing I have here on this slide here. It's a partial correctness predicates. It says it's an evaluation relation here that says that a term and a store evaluate safely to something in Q. Well, it says that if T and S, that's a configuration, if that configuration terminates, then at that time the configuration will satisfy the predicate Q. So either T is a value and Q of T of S holds, or T comma S steps to T1 and S prime, and at that time this predicate here holds. So this up here is a predicate that's defined by guarded recursion, like I told you before. This predicate here, eval, appears under a later operator, so we can define this fixed point. If we write out what this predicate here is in terms of the forcing relation, then we get the following. N forces evaluation, eval of T, S, and Q. If whenever T, S reduces to V, S prime in less than M steps, in less than N steps, then at that time, Q of V, S holds. So those who know step indexing models, here are the steps. The explicit steps are here. Up here, there are no explicit steps. Instead, there are the guarded, the later operators, the guards for the recursion. So in conclusion to this example, I showed you an interpretation of a source language into the internal language of S. There were no explicit steps there, but there was these later operators. And then one can interpret the internal language of S in set theory using the model that I showed you, the step indexing topos. And as we saw just a moment ago, in this second step here, that's where the steps actually occur, the numbers and steps. And so if we consider this composition of interpretations, then we get a known step indexing model. Right. So this leads us to conclude that the guarded recursion is the principle that makes step indexing models work, because we could encode this model completely using guarded recursion. Another conclusion to the example is that the internal language is expressive. We can express a pretty advanced example we can interpret an advanced example of a programming language. We hope that this will also be useful for implementations, and it should be, simply because the interpretation I showed you into the internal language of S is simple and set-like, so it should be encodable in, for instance, Coq, extended with the guarded recursion. And I should say at this point here that we started this particular example. The reason was that this was where we came from, but guarded recursion occurs many places in computer science, and this topos, the topos S in the internal language here, should be useful for many other things. And here are the conclusions to the talk. The topos of trees models recursion on level of terms, predicates, and types. And we've proved that recursive types here interact in a safe way with dependent types, and also that we get a powerful internal language that we can model, for instance, programming languages with higher order store, but also hopefully many other things. And as I said, we saw, we believe that the guarded recursion is the underlying principle that makes step indexing models work. All right. Thank you.